Welcome, everyone, to Think Like a Nurse. We're here to tackle those really high stakes, sometimes confusing nursing topics, and just make them clearer, help you build that confidence for exams, sure, but really for keeping patients safe out there on the floor.
Absolutely. And this show, it's really built on the incredible experience of its creator, Brooke Wallace. You know, 20 years as an ICU nurse, organ transplant coordinator, clinical instructor, published author.
Yeah, incredible background.
And our mission is straightforward: help you develop that essential clinical reasoning, that thinking like a nurse skill.
And if you're deep in pharmacology right now, you'll know exactly why we picked today's topic. We are getting into anticoagulants and antiplatelets. They're like consistently the number two most critical pharma area for nursing students.
Oh, definitely. It's a huge area. Huge for patient risk, huge for liability. I mean, just this class of drugs makes up a pretty significant chunk of the pharmacological and parenteral therapy section on the NCLEX.
Right. We're talking maybe 2 to 4 questions minimum just on this. Kaplan, UWorld, they flag these meds all the time.
So yeah, our goal today is really to nail down those key differences, especially between heparin and warfarin. If you get those, you'll be much better set for interpreting labs, handling emergencies, knowing those bleeding precautions.
Okay, let's dive right in then. The absolute basics first. Anticoagulants, antiplatelets, they both stop clots, right? But they do it differently and for different reasons.
Exactly. Think of it like building a brick wall or maybe a dam, like you said earlier. You need the bricks, that's your platelets, and you need the cement. Those are your clotting factors in the coagulation cascade.
Okay, I like that analogy. Bricks and cement.
So anticoagulants, drugs like heparin and warfarin, they mess with the cement. They interfere with those clotting factors, things like thrombin. We use these mainly when blood flow is sluggish, you know, to prevent clots in the veins. Think DVT, PE, or clots forming because of atrial fibrillation. So primarily venous clots.
Got it. Anticoagulants stung the cement for venous clots, so then antiplatelets must target the bricks.
Precisely. Antiplatelets, think aspirin, Plavix. They stop the platelets, the bricks, from sticking together. They block platelet activation, stop them from clumping up.
And why would you need that instead?
Well, that initial platelet stickiness is really key for clots that form quickly in arteries, where the blood flow is faster, more turbulent. So antiplatelets are your go-to for arterial clots, preventing strokes, heart attacks, or really important after someone gets a coronary stent put in.
Okay, that distinction is super important. Venous versus arterial, cement versus bricks. But the big safety takeaway for both, they both increase bleeding risk, right? It's just that the anticoagulants, the cement blockers, need that really intense lab monitoring.
That's the key difference for day-to-day nursing. Much more hands-on monitoring with the anticoagulants.
All right, let's get into the big players then. Heparin versus warfarin, often called short-term versus long-term, but it's way more nuanced than that. Let's start with heparin.
Okay, heparin. It's your acute care workhorse, really. An antithrombotic. How it works is it activates something called antithrombin the third, and that combo just slams the brakes on two key clotting factors, factor 10A and thrombin. Stops clot formation fast.
And that speed is because of how we give it, right? FAF or subcutaneous.
Exactly. Whoa. Especially four. The onset is practically instant. We're talking minutes. That's why it's the choice for acute stuff, like a brand new DVT, a PE, an evolving stroke.
And because it's so fast-acting and potent, the monitoring has to be just as fast. That's the APTT.
Ant-activated partial thromboplastin time, APTT. You're checking it frequently, especially with an IV drip. The goal, it's usually 1.5 to 2.5 times whatever the lab's control value is, typically lands somewhere between 45 and 80 seconds.
That sounds like it keeps nurses on their toes. Constant the fourth adjustments based on those labs.
Oh, absolutely. It's super dynamic. You're tweaking that drip rate constantly. Get it too low, the patient clots. Too high, they bleed. It takes real vigilance. Plus, and this is critical, you have to monitor platelet counts.
Ah, for HIT, heparin-induced thrombocytopenia.
Exactly. HIT. It's this nasty paradoxical reaction where the heparin causes the platelet count to drop, but it actually causes clotting. Very dangerous.
Okay, so vigilance on APTT, vigilance on platelets. What if things go wrong? If the patient starts bleeding heavily on a heparin drip, what's the reversal?
Protamine sulfate. That's the specific antidote.
Protamine sulfate. Okay. Is there a good way to remember all the key heparin points?
Yeah, there's a handy mnemonic, HAPTT. Think hospital setting, usually IV. Monitor APTT. Protamine is the antidote. Watch for thrombocytopenia, HIT. And it works therapeutically fast. HAPTT.
HAPTT. Nice. Okay, let's switch over to warfarin then, also known as Coumadin, the long-term player.
Right. And warfarin works completely differently. It's a vitamin K antagonist. It stops the liver from using vitamin K to make several key clotting factors, specifically factors 2, 7, 9, and 10.
So it's not directly stopping existing factors like heparin. It's stopping the production of new ones that need vitamin K.
Exactly, which is why it's slow.
Ah, okay. It takes time to deplete the body's existing supply of those factors. That makes sense.
It takes about 3 to 5 days, sometimes even longer, to reach a therapeutic level. And it's given orally as a pill.
So that slow onset explains why it's used for long-term prevention, right? Chronic AFib, folks with mechanical heart valves.
Precisely. Long-term management.
Yeah.
Instead of APTT, we monitor warfarin with the INR, the International Normalized Ratio, which is derived from the PT, the prothrombin time. For most conditions, that target INR range is usually 2 to 3.
Okay, INR 2 to 3. Now let's talk reversal complexity. This seems like a big clinical point. Say a patient on warfarin has an INR of like 8, dangerously high, and they have active bleeding, maybe an intracranial bleed. What are options and what's the difference?
Huge difference, and critical to know, the main antidote is vitamin K.
But it's slow.
It's slow. Giving vitamin K helps the liver start making new factors, but that takes hours, maybe even a day or more, to really correct the INR significantly. If you have a life-threatening bleed right now, like that brain bleed example, you cannot wait for vitamin K to work.
So what do you do for an emergency reversal?
You give the factors back directly. That means fresh frozen plasma, FFP, which contains all the clotting factors, or even faster and more concentrated, is a prothrombin complex concentrated, PCC. Brand name you might see is Kcentra. These work almost immediately to replace the factors the warfarin stopped from being made. Knowing when to use vitamin K versus FFP or PCC is vital.
Wow, okay. Vitamin K for non-urgent high INR, FFP PCC for life-threatening bleeds. Got it. And speaking of vitamin K, that brings up the diet issue. Why is consistency the key for patients on warfarin, not just avoiding vitamin K foods like spinach altogether?
Great question. Because the warfarin dose is balanced against the patient's usual vitamin K intake, if their intake suddenly jumps way up, like they eat tons of leafy greens after eating none for weeks, their INR will plummet because the warfarin is overwhelmed by all the vitamin K. They could clot.
Okay.
Conversely, if they suddenly stop eating vitamin K, their INR could shoot up dangerously high. So the key isn't avoidance, it's consistency. Keep your vitamin K intake stable day to day, week to week.
That's such an important teaching point. Consistency, not elimination. All right, let's nail down the absolute critical lab values, the hold the dose and call the provider numbers. What are they?
These are non-negotiable safety rules. You must hold warfarin if the INR is greater than 3. And you must hold heparin, especially an IV drip, if the APTT is greater than 80 seconds.
INR over 3, hold warfarin. APT over 80, hold heparin. Got it. Those mean the patient is way too anticoagulated, risk of bleeding is sky high.
Exactly. Call a provider, report the value, hold the next dose until you get orders.
And we already touched on this, but let's quickly recap the main antidotes again. Protamine 4.
Heparin. And remember that dosing detail. 1 milligram of protamine for every 100 units of heparin the patient received recently.
Okay. And for warfarin, it's vitamin K for slow reversal, or FFPPCC for emergencies.
Correct.
What about the antiplatelets, aspirin and Plavix? Do they have specific antidotes like that?
Not really specific reversal agents in the same way. If someone is bleeding significantly from aspirin or Plavix, the main strategy is to stop the drug. In a severe, life-threatening hemorrhage, platelet transfusions might be considered to provide fresh, functional platelets. But there's no single-shot antidote like protamine or vitamin K.
Okay, good distinction. Let's spend a moment more on those antiplatelets then. They don't need the INRAP PTT checks, but they have their own serious nursing implications.
They absolutely do, especially around surgery and patient adherence, so aspirin. It works by irreversibly blocking an enzyme called COX-1 in platelets. Stops them getting sticky.
And we always hear give with food, right?
Yeah, helps reduce the GI irritation, stomach upset, even ulcer risk.
Mm-hmm.
And the other huge aspirin point, never give it to children or teens with a viral illness because of the risk of Ray syndrome.
Yeah.
Major contraindication.
Ray syndrome, right. Okay. Then there's Plavix. Clopidogrel works differently.
Yeah, Plavix blocks a specific receptor on the platelet surface called P2Y12. It's another way to stop platelets from getting the signal to aggregate, to clump together.
And what's the number one teaching point, the big safety alert for Plavix?
The preoperative hold. This is critical. Because Plavix's effect on platelets lasts for the lifespan of the platelet, it must be stopped usually 5 to 7 days before any planned surgery or invasive procedure.
5 to 7 days? That's a long time. Nurses need to be all over that pre-op teaching and checklist.
Absolutely. Otherwise, the patient could have uncontrollable bleeding during the procedure. And the flip side is just as critical. Adherence after certain procedure.
Like after getting a cardiac stent.
Exactly. For someone who just had a stent placed, those antiplatelets, often aspirin and Plavix together, are life-saving. Missing even one or two doses dramatically increases the risk of the stent suddenly clotting off, called stent thrombosis. That can cause a massive heart attack or even death. Adherence is non-negotiable.
Wow. So high stakes on both ends, stopping it before surgery, never missing it after a stent. Okay, regardless of which drug they're on, heparin, warfarin, aspirin, Plavix, they all increase bleeding risk. So there must be universal precautions we teach everyone.
Yes, absolutely. This is fundamental nursing care for any patient on any blood thinner. We teach them basic safety. Use a soft bristle toothbrush to protect their gums. Switch to an electric razor, not a blade razor, to minimize nicks.
Makes sense. What about injections?
Avoid intramuscular IM injections whenever possible. There's a real risk of causing a deep hematoma, a large bruise deep in the muscle, which can be really painful and take ages to resolve. Subcutaneous is generally safer if an injection is needed.
Okay, no IMs. What else?
Fall precautions are huge, especially for older adults. A fall could lead to serious internal bleeding and empower the patient and family to monitor for signs of bleeding. Teach them what to look for.
Like what specifically?
Things like black Terry stools melina, coffee ground looking vomit hematemesis, blood in the urine hematuria, nosebleeds that don't stop easily, bleeding gums, excessive bruising for no clear reason. Report any of those immediately.
And finally, what about other medications or even supplements? What should they avoid?
This is crucial interaction teaching. They absolutely need to avoid NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Think ibuprofen, naproxen, Aleve, Motrin. NSAIDs also affect platelets and significantly increase bleeding risk when combined with anticoagulants or antiplatelets. They should also limit alcohol intake and be cautious with certain supplements known to increase bleeding risk, things like high-dose vitamin E, garlic supplements, ginger, ginkgo biloba. Always discuss supplements with their provider.
Wow, okay. That's a lot of crucial safety information packed in there. So let's try to boil this down. If you're listening, what are the absolute must-know takeaways from today?
Okay, number one. Know the basic difference. Anticoagulants, heparin, warfarin, affect the clotting factors, the cascade, mainly for venous clots. Antiplatelets, aspirin, Plavix, affect platelet stickiness, mainly for arterial clots.
Got it. Difference in mechanism and clot type. Number two.
Master the labs and the hold values. APTT for heparin, hold if over 80. INR for warfarin, hold if over 3. Know those numbers cold.
Labs and hold values. Critical. And number three.
Bleeding is always the priority concern. Recognize active bleeding. Know the immediate steps, stop the drug, call for help, anticipate orders for reversal agents. Prioritization questions on exams, love scenarios involving bleeding.
And understanding the speed of those reversal agents is key there too, right? Protamine is fast for heparin, vitamin K is slow for warfarin, unless you use FFP-PCC in an emergency.
Exactly. That's moving beyond just memorizing facts to understanding the clinical application. And maybe one final thought. Remember that managing these medications isn't just about labs and drips. It's deeply tied to patient education.
How so?
Well, think about that warfarin diet consistency. A small change in what the patient eats can throw everything off. Or them not understanding why they can't just take ibuprofen for a headache. Success relies so much on the patient being an informed partner. So our role as nurses in teaching, reinforcing, and constantly assessing their understanding, it's just paramount. It requires real vigilance.
That's a perfect point to end on. Vigilance and patient education are inseparable from safe medication use here. Thank you so much for breaking all that down. That was incredibly helpful. And thank you all for tuning in to Think Like a Nurse. Join us again next week as we tackle another complex nursing topic and make it clearer.